This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Coming up right after 1:30, we've been doing this on Fridays for the last month and a half. I've been stuck here at home for 3 months now since my knee surgery. So I haven't had any outside public contact except for an occasional run to the grocery store. But as far as seeing friends, So I got to do a better job of that. So I try to catch up with somebody in my contacts list during COVID on Friday afternoons. And we've had, we've had Kenny Mayne from ESPN, and Cashman, Bob Rivers, Tony Ventrella. And we have somebody that longtime listeners to this radio show will be very familiar with coming up at 1:30 this afternoon, catching up with my contacts during COVID. And Nicole, am I correct that we have an abbreviated show today? Is Governor Inslee, does he have a press conference at 2:30 this afternoon?
That's correct, 2:30.
So we'll carry it live. I wonder if anybody's going to ask him about trying to steer those contracts to his cousin Mark. I hope the Seattle Times reporters, who did such a great job on that watchdog piece, I hope they ask him about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't get my hopes up about that one, but that'd be cool.
Well, that's the problem. These governor press conferences are pathetic because the reporters, the questions are pre-screened. They are not allowed to ask any follow-up questions, and there's just no information coming down at all. But
I'm not sure
we'll still bring
it to
you live.
Pre-screened. Like, I don't think they ask the question before and get it approved or anything, but
I think they do to the extent that they don't want the same, you don't want three different reporters asking the same question. So I think they are to that extent.
Possibly. I don't know. We could look into that. Let's ask our friend Brandy or Hannah or somebody and ask them how much they have to get approved.
Yeah, I'm sure Hannah will be. She'll be one of the questioners this afternoon. So, okay, we'll keep track of that, and we'll bring you my favorite guy, Jay Inslee, live at 2:30 this afternoon. But you better start answering some of these questions that are coming down about how this is about public control and not public health. You want another example of how far gone so many in the media are with all of this? On the CBS affiliate in Chicago, there was an ice cream truck going through. It looks like a really nice upper middle class neighborhood. And there's a producer who works for this CBS affiliate who apparently lives in the neighborhood. And he was outraged that an ice cream man was coming through the neighborhood. I have to tell you, this is about as ridiculous as a news story gets, as this guy just tries to shame the ice cream man driving through his neighborhood.
That iconic music screams summer, and we all scream for ice cream. But during a pandemic, social distance the rule, getting close to the ice cream man could mean getting something else, fact of life. Yet here's Mr. Freeze, not his name, in his truck of treats, unmasked, ungloved, taking cash for cones in the Northwest burbs.
Okay, now, before I keep playing this, so a kid can go into any grocery store, can buy a creamsicle, and then go to the checkout counter and pay for it. But this guy is outraged because an ice cream truck is allowing kids to do the same thing. But listen, and this is why you are hearing the government's line from most in the media. The media has decided we're just going to be a microphone for the government, and whatever they tell us is so. And, you know, as I went through last hour, it ain't so. And the fact that a lot of my fellow media people don't want to acknowledge that there are some things that we should start challenging here. But listen to them going after this ice cream truck driver. It's just insane.
That's when CBS2 assignment editor Greg Kelly, father of two, dad on a bike, said, wait a minute.
You think it's a good idea to be doing this with the stay-at-home order? With COVID-19.
Eventually, our Greg got a bit closer, tried to get an answer from Mr. Freeze. Again, not his name.
Why are you doing this, sir?
Why are you trying to take
why are you selling ice cream to children without wearing a mask?
Why are you trying to... Are you sick?
Am I sick? No, and I want to say
I'm
that.
I'm not sick either. So why are they quarantining healthy people?
What's your name,
okay,
sir?
This is not a law.
At this time, face coverings are required in public situations where social distance cannot be maintained.
I have a permit. I get permits.
Right. You got the permit before the stay-at-home order.
I can't understand what you're saying. Back up and remove the mask.
I'm not removing the mask.
He drove off after the questioning by our assignment desk editor, dad, biker, and journalist Greg Kelly. But this all happened in Hoffman Estates, and tonight we'd learn ice cream trucks there are banned, have been for years. The village manager tells us, if you see that ice cream man, call 911.
Whoa, dad, biker, and journalist. Call 911 in Chicago? They're in Chicago. There's 600 gang murders a year. And you're going to call 911 because the ice cream man is driving down the street of an upscale neighborhood? And, oh, I mean, it has just gotten insane. And it's where this guy, because he's an assignment editor for CBS Chicago, that guy decided that he's the cop of other private citizens' lives. And again, it's because the media is helping fuel this government storyline, which has created hysteria because a hysterical population is easier to control. And that's why you and I, we got to start fighting back with facts and not fall for the hysteria. Let's stay at home. Keep working from home. If you're high risk, don't let your kids who have been socializing come visit you. I know a lot of people who would love to go see their parents, and they don't because they said, we're seeing our friends a couple times a week, and we don't want to bring anything home to our parents. That's just people being responsible. I'll keep washing my hands like a maniac, like I've been doing the last month. I'll keep working from home. I'll socially distance. I won't go out and socialize with friends as long as this is a high-risk issue. But let the young and healthy get back to work and get back to living. Get some sense of freedom once again. And that was CBS Local Chicago. And then you got CBS Network. We told you yesterday about James O'Keefe, Project Veritas. On the CBS Morning News last Friday, national network show, they wanted to show that drive-through testing is now available in Michigan, one of the hardest-hit states. But the line to get tested is so long. There was only one problem for the media/government narrative. It was fake, because there wasn't a long line. So CBS staged some of the healthcare workers, said, hey, will you get in your car and just line up so we can get video of that for our story? And we've now found CBS has confirmed part of this. Project Veritas, I played this for you yesterday. They talked to one of the whistleblowers.
Stop telling me you're 100% certain that CBS News, CBS News Corporation, National, staged a fake event. They faked the news. They faked the reality and broadcasted that to all of their audience last Friday on CBS This Morning.
100% absolutely.
Only six states have...
100% absolutely. And CBS has now acknowledged it. Not to the extent that Project Veritas alleges, but I don't trust CBS, what they're saying about it. CBS says, let me find their statement here. They were forced to admit that cars in the line were staged. They denied having anything to do with it or knowing about it at the time. In their statement, they said CBS News did not stage anything at the Cherry Health facility. Any suggestion to the contrary is 100% false. These allegations are alarming. We reached out to Cherry Health to address them immediately. They informed us for the first time that one of their chief officers told at least one staffer to get in the testing line along with real patients. No one from CBS News had any knowledge of this before tonight. They also said that their actions did not prevent any actual patients from being tested. Well, it delayed someone from getting tested, everybody behind the fake car in the line. But then CBS said, and this is interesting, they would remove that video from the piece and from their archives. Now, understand, this is the third time CBS has aired fake coronavirus video. They showed video of an Italian hospital and said it was a New York City hospital because the Italian hospital was overrun. And that was in March. And CBS was busted for it. They apologized. They said they'll never do it again. And then in April, they did the exact same thing again. They used the exact same Italian footage as a stand-in for New York. And they said, well, these are all just innocent mistakes. But isn't it interesting that every innocent mistake, they all only fall one direction? John Nolte was writing about this in his column this morning. Their innocent mistakes only fall in one direction. And in this case, with CBS Network, it's designed to just damage the president. Oh, hospitals are overrun. Triage on the sidewalks. That's Italy. Testing, but now the lines are too long. That's fake. And on it goes. So the networks, they have their agenda. They have become just monomaniacal about anything that can hurt the administration. And then the local politicians are anything that can push this, you know, radical, union-driven, anti-car, anti-gun agenda. If you miss the noon hour, you go check out the podcast because I lay it all out for you there. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. Meanwhile, some more heritage Seattle companies may be falling by the wayside. Now, bankruptcy doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go bye-bye. But Sur La Table, which has had a retail store in Pike Place Market for 48 years, according to Bloomberg, they are filing for bankruptcy. It's been a, you know, real high-end kitchenware, home goods. They do cooking classes. They've had they have 125 stores across the country, but they are just in dire financial straits. They were purchased in 2011 by a private investment firm for $146 million, and now they're bankrupt in the midst of coronavirus. And so the economic shutdown continues to cost us businesses and jobs. That's for dang sure. All right, next up in the Festus 15. Nicole, back in the day, you did a lot of nannying for families, right?
Right.
Okay, did you see this new poll that's out? 50% of men say they are doing most of the homeschooling now that the kids are at home. But only 3% of women agree that men are doing half of the homeschooling. You have more
specific. Well, you know, have the more 3%, friends. I wonder if that's Right. Well, I do.
I was going to say, you have more friends with children. So what is going on?
I feel like a lot of men have taken that duty on. A lot of them, I have a few friends who have, like the father is unemployed right now. Some of them, the women are working from home and the father's unemployed. And so they've taken it over. In my brother and sister-in-law's case, they've each taken a child. And then I have a couple other friends that have both parents home and they kind of divide, but I would say that there's a couple, I know quite a few men that have really taken over because the moms are at their wit's end right now.
No. Well, men claim that half of them are doing the homeschooling. Now, I'm doing a little bit of it. I homeschool Sean for a couple hours every day from 9 to 10. We go over geography.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember some of the stuff from this morning, Sean?
Regarding geography?
Do you remember some of the stuff we went over? The capital of Montana is?
Well, I think that would be Billings, wouldn't it?
I'm the worst teacher in the world.
Dory, what are you teaching me? Are you teaching me fake news?
And Branson. Right when we get off.
It's Branson, Montana. Yes.
No, remember, Branson is in Missouri. We went over that right. This morning, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
What is the capital of Montana?
That would be Helena.
Helena Handbasket.
Yeah. Yes. And then as soon as we get off the air at 3 o'clock, it's kind of tough because Sean runs the board for Tom and Curly, but we do math from 3 to 4 o'clock. So...
Yeah.
So I've taken on some of the burden of homeschool.
That's why Tom and Curly
is your child star.
Yeah. That's why the first hour of Tom and Curly is so shoddy on the air is because I'm taking math lessons with Dory.
Nah, I think the reason it's so shoddy is Tom. Mm. But that's another subject altogether. Oh, yeah, and Curly, too. That's the other reason it's so shoddy. Okay, and all of that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
I got to stay in touch with friends somehow, and I'll drag you along with it. On Fridays, I like to catch up with my contacts during COVID. If you're a longtime listener of The Big Show, you'll know my next guest. That's coming up next as the Dory Monson Show continues.
For the memory
well, that's, of sentimental no. verse. When this whole thing started, nothing the stay at home, I don't see anybody. I'm home, I'm with my family, but that's it. I don't see anybody. So I have to make some effort to stay in touch with the people that I care about, the people in my contacts list. So we launched Catching Up with My Contacts During COVID, and we've had a pretty august list of people, Kenny Mayne and Pat Cashman, Bob Rivers, Tony Ventrella, but I kept getting requests from listeners for today's person in Catching Up with My Contacts. They said, we'd sure like to know what your former producer, Jake Skorheim, is doing now, Dory. And so Jake Skorheim joins us. You're on the Dory Monson Show. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
You know, it's weird that you were such a daily, very busy part of the show for how long? How long did we work together?
You know, I think we worked together for like 6-7 years.
Yeah. And so since then, we stay in touch and we go out to dinner once in a while, but this is the first time you've been back on the show. Why have you been avoiding me? Why have you been professionally avoiding me?
It just brings up it makes me too sad because I miss it so much. And so I couldn't handle it. That's a funny question. It's really great to be back. I'm super excited and I was honored to get the call. Thank you for that's quite a list to be yes, put on there. So and for the one person who actually emailed saying what was that guy up to?
Yeah.
Thank you for emailing. I'm glad I'm here.
I never exaggerate numbers, you know that.
No, that's true.
But no, the one thing I'm comfortable with is yeah. because I always want the people I care about to achieve their goals and their dreams and to be happy. One thing I'm comfortable with is I'm pretty sure you don't miss working on the show every day. You're
no,
ready.
You know what? No, to be completely honest and not to kiss your butt, I miss our daily interactions very
yes.
much. That's the one part. There's a lot of other things about working in radio that you put up with, but you do get the opportunity from time to time to work with someone like yourself. So that was that's the part I miss about it.
Well, I'll make that mutual because you know, and I know I made the comparison to you, but when I was 21 and I started interning at King 5, and Tony Ventrella was in his 40s. I mean, there was about a 20-year age gap. And
yeah.
we became best friends, and we worked together every single day and are still
history repeats.
Yeah, except now I was the old guy, and the guy 20 years younger was my best friend. But I'm serious. I've never laughed on a consistent basis like I would just as we were screwing around putting the show together and talking about what we were going to do.
I still think about, you know, when you texted me, the other day and said, hey, why don't you come on this thing? Instantly 200 stories popped into my head of things that we had done or talked about or shouldn't have talked about and got in trouble talking about, on the air. And, you know, it was like a flood of wonderful memories that came back. Specifically, the one I was thinking about, actually,
yeah.
Do you remember when I had that Volkswagen van that was like my baby that I love so much?
Yes.
Do you remember the email that I got on the air and you looked across to me? You're in the middle of a segment. You look across at me and it's like I had just seen a ghost. I was just comatose almost. And we get off the air and you went, what's the matter? And I read you the email that I just received. And it was from this guy in North Carolina. And he says, hey, I just bought your van that you donated and I need, you know, he needed some document or something. And I found that email was informing me that my van was in perfect running condition. I had donated it because I thought that the engine had burst and
yeah,
was you'd, dead.
You had a lousy mechanic who misdiagnosed it.
That's right. I had a mechanic who misdiagnosed it. Somebody recommended this guy to me that they said was the best mechanic ever. And I trusted that person. So I went to that mechanic. Do you remember who that person was?
oh, yeah. I recommended him, didn't I?
You recommended the mechanic.
I forgot about that.
Anyway, he tells me my van is dead because I don't think he really wants to look at it. I donate the van after 2 years of storing it. My wife finally says, we got to get rid of this thing. I donate it. I get a call from this guy a year later saying, hey, I bought your great van at an auction for $8,000. And I said, why'd you pay $8,000? And what did you do to fix it? And he goes, what do you mean fix it? I just put gas in it. It runs great.
Oh, no.
The gas gauge was broken. And, you know, I ended up just donating a perfectly good van. But and it went to
not
charity.
Just, so. Not just a perfectly good van, but the vehicular love of your life.
Love of my life.
Yeah.
The dream, the car I dreamed about. My dad had one of those when I was a little kid. And so I got this weird van fetish in my head. And someday I was going to buy one of those. When I finally could, I bought one. And then I fixed it up and outfitted it and did everything you want to do to it. And then I,
yeah.
you know, forgot to put gas in it. The reason I was thinking of that, though, when you called, is because the other day, we're all filling our time right now with silly hobbies and side things when we're stuck at home. I had these two mopeds that were sitting out in the woods that had been sitting out there forever. And so I thought to myself, like, I'm going to fix these mopeds up. You know, I'm not really mechanical, as you can imagine after that story. and so I pull the mopeds out and I put the gas in, I do the mix that you're supposed to do because whatever. And then I start, and they don't run, you know, they're working like horrible. And I call my brother. I'm like, what's the problem? Why is the gas? You know, I mixed the gas is perfectly like I should. And he goes, who told you to mix it? And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, it's an engine. You know, it's like, it's made to stop at a gas station. You put a gas, you're not supposed to mix gas in the middle of a moped ride.
Yeah.
And so I'm just plagued by gas issues. I guess.
No, yeah. So, they're the first mopeds you had to do the oil gas mix, but
not
anymore. No,
anymore, I guess.
That was another thing we bonded over, I guess, our absolute lack of any mechanical know-how. I've had a rider mower for about 10 years, and it wasn't working, so I said to my wife, I got to get a new rider. And I'm looking on the...
it wasn't working?
No. it's like $1,500, $2,000. And this is about a month ago. And I'm thinking, I don't want to go to the store. I'll just have them send it to my house. And then all of a sudden, I hear my lawnmower running. And my son-in-law goes, oh, I fixed it for you. It was fine.
What was the problem?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It needed gas.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know
it's
what?
It's amazing.
I told everybody I was going to get them caught up on what you're doing. Can you stick around?
Oh, yeah. Let's quit talking about motors. Go ahead.
Know. Yeah, our best subject. Okay, Jake Skorheim. It's catching up with my contacts during COVID, and we will continue the conversation in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show.
That's the way it goes, I guess.
Catching up with my contacts during COVID, I did get a lot. And seriously, Jake, I did get a lot of requests from listeners. They wanted to know what former show producer Jake Skorheim was doing. And, you know, one of the things I've said, I've been incredibly blessed. 25 years. I hit my 25-year mark
on
the show last month, Jake. I've had four.
I'm sure the station did something special for you.
Not one person mentioned one word to me. It's funny. I'm sitting in my home office here. And on the wall, they had a beautiful caricature artist do a nice framed for my 10-year anniversary.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Then for my 20-year anniversary, which I think you were at, the program director who didn't like me completely sabotaged it. Dave Wyman still wants to beat up the program director back then for sabotaging my anniversary party the way he did.
This time they just decided
they
be
just
easier.
Totally
just don't recognize it.
It. Seriously, not one person said one thing about it. But anyway, we're in the midst of a crisis, so what the heck. But anyway, I've only had four producers in 25 years.
Boy.
Sean Splain, Phil Vandervoort, you, and now Nicole, who, you know, like you, has just turned into one of my closest friends and is a fantastic producer as well. And because I didn't think I was going to be able to replace you. In all seriousness,
that's what I like to hear. I'm very replaceable.
Well,
I appreciate that.
It means I hit the jackpot.
Nicole's fantastic. I think she's doing a great job.
Yeah.
She's doing a really great job.
And in case people weren't listening back then, Jake's last day, I mean, you must just had so much human pity for what a wreck I was.
No. I was right there with you.
That's the
We were just a couple of blubbering crybabies.
The hardest I've ever sobbed on the air was saying goodbye to you. That was tough.
Yeah,
or
when you were pepper sprayed, but yeah.
Yeah. The reason you left was, and this is a very cool story, and I knew about it. And what's also very cool is I remember the day you said you thought you were going to ask a girl in the office out for a date. You told me that you were going to ask her out for a date. And then I watch you guys date and get married. And now three little boys.
Yeah. Everything is moving along nicely.
It's incredible. But tell the story, because you didn't want to be a radio producer. You were fantastic, but that's not what you wanted to do. But didn't you just Google your dream one day and something popped up for you?
Well, yeah, I had, for a long time, I had kind of had this idea that I wanted to try to get into screenwriting, which is kind of one of those professions that's, unless you're in it, it's very tough to figure out how to get in it. And then even once you know about it, it's very tough to just figure out what it is. You know, like I don't think a lot of people know what screenwriters do, but it's something I was really interested in, and so I just Google searched how to be a screenwriter. And as it happened, there was a guy living, part time in LA, and he was from Seattle, and so he would live in Seattle when he wasn't working in LA, and. He had a blog post, I think it was in the Seattle PI when they were still a thing.
Yeah.
They're not still a thing, are they? They went away?
They still exist, but nobody is aware of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It was a newspaper at the time. and anyway, he had done a guest blog about screenwriting, and the title of his blog was How to Be a Screenwriter. And I was like, oh, that's exactly what I searched for. That's probably why it came up. That's perfect. Yeah. At the end of his blog post, he included his email. I, you know, very, very awkwardly emailed him, I'm sure, and you know, impressed upon him how much I would love to take him out to a coffee to try to, you know, tap his brain and figure out what he knows about screenwriting. And, you know, and he ended up agreeing to it. And so we went to coffee, and that has, you know, ended up blossoming into a many year friendship that ended up turning up now, you know, now we're actually writing partners and we write together. So it actually ended up kind of being a pretty amazing, lucky email from all those years ago.
No, that's not luck. That's well, somebody with a goal and the drive to pursue the goal. And, you know, that was why, you know, when you left, I was so happy for you. I mean, I was personally and professionally, I guess, for the show too, devastated. But personally, I want everybody to reach their goals. And the fact that you had that, you figured out a way to make it happen, that's a life lesson for everybody right there.
Well, it was very fortunate. And I got a lot of lucky breaks, obviously, but yeah, so that's what I'm doing, currently still doing it. And, you know, it's been a wild ride and quite, you know, it comes with its own set of, pressures yeah. as well. I mean, radio has a lot. Hollywood also has a lot. So, yeah. But we're still surviving and doing it. So, you know, we're having fun for now.
I know you cannot talk about any specific projects, but the bottom line is, you know, I'm aware of some that are coming up and I'll look forward to sharing them with people. But
yeah,
bottom line is you're making a good living doing what you always dreamed of doing.
I would say in this moment right now that you've caught me in this moment, it's a very nice thing, you know, to be able to look back on the road that led here, you know, and that includes yeah. my time working with you. And then it includes all the, you know, all the struggles trying to get into the, you know, writing as well. But, you know, I'm very blessed. I have my beautiful wife and I have three boys and, you know, a job I like doing every day. So yeah, it's a lot. We're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
That's
there
awesome.
Is coronavirus, which is a thing.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, and that comes with its own hassles, but you know, beyond that, right. everything's pretty good.
Yeah. And, you're in a transitional living situation right now. I know too.
Yeah. We have a house that's being built and, that we bought, and it's, we were in the middle of moving as that happened. And, we ended up living at my parents' house. So we are quarantining at my parents' house.
Okay. With three boys all under the age of what?
Three boys all under the age of five. and my parents and my wife and I. So that's, you know.
Nice.
We're surviving.
Well, that's all we can do. That's all we can hope
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
All right. We have just caught up with one of my contacts, the former producer, Jake Skorheim. Jake, it's great talking with you, and let's get together once the government allows us to.
Yeah, once we get our papers, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, man.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Jake Skorheim catching up with our contacts. You can text me, 98973. We'll check the news for you. And then the big lead at 2 coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Tuesday goodbye to yesterday.